It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. officials say Kurdish fighters still control most of Kobani, and Ebola suspected in death of a British traveler. I'm Bill Michaels, reporting from Washington. The United States military says Kurdish militias in Kobani remain in control of most of the city along the Syria-Turkey border and are resisting a takeover by Islamic State militants. The assessment comes amid intensified U.S.-led airstrikes on IS targets in and around the Syrian city, amid fears it could soon fall to the militants. In 2013, the World Bank ranked Sierra Leone and Liberia as second and sixth, respectively, among the top 10 countries with the fastest-growing GDPs. But the ongoing Ebola outbreak is threatening to change that. World Bank President Jim Yong Kim says growth projections for 2014 have already been cut significantly and will be cut again next year if this disease is not controlled.
As much as $32.6 billion could be lost by the end of 2015. This is a potentially catastrophic impact.
You can read more on this story at our website, voanews.com. Britain will start enhanced screening of passengers arriving from West Africa at two London airports and the Eurostar train station, while a suspected Ebola death of a British man is reported in Macedonia. Macedonian hospital officials say the victim showed symptoms of Ebola, including fever, vomiting, and internal bleeding. Those who brought him to the hospital are in isolation, and his hotel has been sealed off. It's unclear if the man was in Africa before heading to Macedonia. This is VOA News. The International Committee for the Red Cross reports clashes in Central African Republic's capital have resulted in many casualties. At least 8 people have been killed and 25 wounded as gunfire and explosions rang out around Bangui overnight and into Thursday. The toll is expected to rise as the clashes continued in the worst violence in the city since a United Nations force took over peacekeeping last month. On Thursday, a UN official said the peacekeeping force had suffered its first casualty in the CAR. The most powerful storm on the planet so far this year is churning in the Pacific and is forecast to strike mainland Japan before Monday. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
Weather forecasters are keeping a close watch on the strongest storm since Super Typhoon Haiyan devastated the Philippines last year, killing 6,000 people. Satellite images of Vongfong have revealed a perfectly formed eye, 40 kilometers in size, surrounded by a giant swirling disk of cloud northeast of the Philippines. Over open water, far from land, Vongfong yet poses little danger. The typhoon will bear down on Okinawa on Saturday, where it is predicted to dump up to 48 centimeters of rain, before continuing north towards the southern and central islands of mainland Japan. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Student leaders for the Hong Kong pro-democracy protest have called on supporters to continue occupying public spaces just hours after the government called off talks meant to ease weeks of tensions in the semi-autonomous Chinese territory. Alex Chow of the Hong Kong Federation of Students on Thursday blamed the government for the stall in negotiations, saying the students had not done anything to provoke the action. He ridiculed the government's decision to cancel the talks. The new Palestinian Unity government held its first cabinet meeting Thursday. Fatah and Hamas officials convened amid rubble and destruction in Gaza. Palestinian Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah, representing the moderate Fatah faction, said he cried when he saw how residents of Gaza are living and where they are sleeping. He said the new government's priority is reconstruction, and he hopes Sunday's International Donors Conference will be a success. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko on Thursday signed anti-graft legislation that Kiev says could see hundreds of thousands of civil servants lose their jobs if found to have had links with past Soviet or pro-Russian governments. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, and this is VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, the 10th day of October, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The World Bank discusses the impact of Ebola on the economies of the three most affected West African countries.
As much as $32.6 billion could be lost by the end of 2015. This is a potentially catastrophic impact.
That's World Bank President Jim Yong Kim. The Texas hospital where Ebola patient Thomas Eric Duncan dies responds to criticism that he was not given proper treatment. President Sirleaf Leaf suspends next week's special senatorial elections, but does she have the constitutional mandate to do so?
The president, she don't have that constitutional authority to make such a pronouncement. So based upon that, tomorrow morning we will be driving a resolution to be sent to the Madrid Senate.
Topa Momba is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives. Sierra Leone's military constructs Ebola treatment centers. A suspected case of Ebola causes panic in Zimbabwe's capital. Amnesty International says there are hundreds of needless maternal deaths in South Africa. And Ethiopian foreign workers struggle after repatriation from Saudi Arabia. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In 2013, the World Bank ranked Sierra Leone and Liberia as second and sixth, respectively, among the top 10 countries with the fastest growing GDPs. But the ongoing Ebola outbreak is threatening to change that as the numbers of cases and deaths continue to rise. Financial institutions like the World Bank say the economies of the three most affected countries, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, are being hit hard, and the impact could grow if the Ebola epidemic is not quickly contained. Mariama Diallo has more.
The death toll from Ebola in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone is approaching 4,000. If the epidemic continues, the World Bank says the impact on the country's economies could be disastrous. At the gathering in Washington, the presidents of those three countries pleaded with global development leaders for help. Sierra Leone's Ernest Bai Koroma and Liberia's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf joined the conversation via video conference.
Ebola is now causing great disruptions to agricultural, mining, manufacturing, construction, tourism, and transportation, and posing a significant threat to human development, state security, and poverty reduction. Government revenues are drying up.
Restrictions imposed on air and sea travel resulted in increased cost of travel and increased commodity prices affecting the poor.
The answer to this crisis.
World Bank President Jim Yong Kim says growth projections for 2014 have already been cut significantly and will be cut again next year if this disease is not contained.
As much as $32.6 billion could be lost by the end of 2015. This is a potentially catastrophic impact.
David Evans, a World Bank senior economist, says the countries have already been hit with serious losses.
Across the three countries, we're seeing more than $350 million of lost output. What that means is that Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea will be more than $350 million poorer than they would have been in the absence of this disease.
Take West Africa's flight industry, for example.
What we've seen is from through August, we had more than 30 flights per week going in and out of Sierra Leone. That had dropped to six in September, right? And we see likewise, we see fuel sales, we see other leading indicators like cement sales dropping significant percentage points. So people are just afraid to invest.
Transport and trade are really
Amadou C, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, says the consequences go beyond what's happening right now.
On the one hand, You know, all your revenues are going to go down because of the reduced economic activity. On the other hand, you have more expenditures, you know. You have this health expenditures, security expenditures. So you're really, really having a fiscal deficit that is going to be much bigger than what you expected.
Guinea's president, Alpha Conde, who was at the meeting in person, confirmed that view, saying his country and others are going to need budgetary support to fund the fight against Ebola. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, where Liberian Ebola patient Thomas Eric Duncan died this week, has responded to criticism that Duncan did not receive adequate treatment. The president of the Liberian Community Association in Dallas-Fort Worth told VOA yesterday that some in the community, including some of Duncan's family members, felt Duncan was not given the right medication to save his life. But in a statement issued Thursday, the hospital said Duncan received, quote, appropriate and available medical interventions. The statement went on to say a team of more than 50 people cared for him in a professional and compassionate manner, and an entire 24-bed intensive care unit was secured and dedicated to Mr. Duncan's care. The hospital also explained that Duncan did not get the experimental drug ZMAP like some others because the supply was exhausted on August 12th, nor did he get a serum transfusion because his blood type was not compatible with donors. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has suspended next week's special senatorial elections. A government statement posted on the foreign ministry website said the president's action was in line with powers given her by both the Constitution and the declaration of the Ebola state of emergency. In August, the chairman of the National Elections Commission wrote both houses of the legislature suggesting an adjustment be made in the October 14 date because the commission could not hold a free, fair, and credible election due to the ongoing deadly Ebola crisis. Tokba Molba is a former deputy speaker of the House of Representatives representing the People Unification Party. He tells me the president does not have the constitutional mandate to announce the postponement of the elections.
We all know that it's not possible to hold the election next Tuesday because there will be a certain stages from the commissions to certain aspects of it have happened, like procuring the ballot papers and also deploying the election material. It cannot happen because the 12th of August, the commission wrote up because the week of the crisis, Ebola outbreak in the country, it cannot be able to conduct all the activity before October 14, 2014. So for that reason, we need to find a suitable date. But the legislatures today, in their own wisdom, hold a section today and deliberated on it, and they were part of a joint resolution. The executive announcement from the chief executive, Martin Salee, the president, she don't have that constitutional authority to make such a pronouncement. So based upon that, tomorrow morning we will be drafting a resolution to be sent to the Liberian Senate for concurrent and lay in front of Martin Salee to sign on it. The elections commission to go ahead to conduct election from now to December 30th. That comes second Tuesday in January, that is new 15th senator to be able to take a seat.
So if I hear you, Representative, the view of the legislature is that the elections should not be postponed indefinitely, but that they should be held before the end of the year.
Yeah, before the end of the year, that's the view. Because you cannot postpone it indefinitely, which means the government will be acting illegal, and nobody has that authority to do that. So we will be in a constitutional crisis. We don't want that.
But can it be argued, and the government has said, that the President Sirleaf is exercising the powers given her under the state of emergency?
No, she don't have that power. It's clear. Article 80B and 87A is clear. She don't have that power. She cannot suspend certain provision within the Constitution that will have effect on the what? On the order of elections. It's clear. So for the reason, in my argument today, I said that she was advised by the legal authority who work with her. So for the reason, we are doing the right thing to be able to go ahead and work on this.
So if I understand, then, therefore, the legislature has already drafted a resolution that is supposed to be approved or sent to the Senate.
Yes, the House of Representatives. Will be taking a vote on that resolution tomorrow. They send over to the Senate, Liberia Senate. Monday, maybe the Liberia Senate can concur with and send it over to the president before Tuesday morning.
Topa Mwamba is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Sierra Leone's National Army has teamed up with British medics and engineers to construct Ebola treatment centers across the country, especially in areas worst hit by the disease. Colonel Michael Samura, spokesman for Sierra Leone's military, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the military has intensified patrols in border areas to ensure those infected with the disease are prevented from coming into the country.
We still continue with our operations at the border areas, of course. And then, of course, we have had a lot of assistance coming in. The British engineers and medics are in. They're helping us with the construction of treatment centers across the country, particularly areas that are mostly affected with Ebola. Of course, the UN team is expected in soon. Our engineers are doing so well. They are assisting the country with the construction of treatment centers all over the country where they are needed. They are also working in collaboration with a British team that is in.
Colonel Samura, recently some Cuban doctors arrived in the country to help with this effort at combating the Ebola disease. How has that been helping the Army's effort and particularly the medical team's effort in the country to help combat this disease?
Yeah, that's right. They just arrived about 2 days back, and they're trying to settle down before they actually start doing their job. They were received 2 days back, and they're trying to settle down now to start working. I'm sure it is going to boost our efforts so much in the fight against Ebola.
So far, what has been the collaboration between the Army as well as neighboring armies since you have intensified patrols at the borders to ensure that no new cases crosses the border into Sierra Leone?
Well, we're all working towards the same goal. So definitely, as we are preventing people from going across into their country, they're also stopping their own people from coming across to us, because we don't want people to be moving back and forth. And this is the way eventually the virus is being spread here and there.
So far, with all these efforts that the Army is putting across, what do you think are the prospects of being successful in this initiative?
You know, Ebola is a new thing in this country. We're putting all efforts to ensure that we fight it, we fight against it strongly. Everything is a trial and error. We shall see, but we definitely expect some great improvement.
Colonel Michael Samura is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's military. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, the 10th day of October. Daybreak Africa time is 18 minutes past the hour. In Zimbabwe, a suspected case of Ebola sent shockwaves across the capital, Harare, on Thursday, forcing health officials to allay public fears, saying the patient had only tested positive for malaria but was being screened for Ebola as a cautionary measure. Health Minister David Parientoa told a news conference that the unnamed patient, a female foreigner, was under isolation at Wilkins Hospital and that her blood samples had been sent to South Africa for further tests. Harare City Health Director Dr. Prosper Chonzi says investigations into the Wilkins case are continuing.
We have only trained staff working at Wilkins Hospital with this suspected case. They have to support the usual support that somebody with suspected Ebola is. But this one, because we confirmed that she tested positive using the RDT, the rapid diagnostic test, she tested positive for malaria. So we are treating her with quinine as a case of malaria as we investigate to see if she could have Ebola. But she has done very well. She is now sitting out of bed. She is walking since yesterday. She is feeding. She even took a bath on her own today, and she remains apraxial. She's, as I said, fully conscious, unless if something drastic and dramatic happens tonight. But she's generally on the mend and responding to the quinine. So we are now managing her as a case of malaria, but we will still continue chasing after the results so that we can conclusively say this is not Ebola.
Is there any reason for Zimbabweans to panic?
No, not at the moment. There is absolutely no reason for Zimbabweans to panic. I think they should actually take comfort in the fact that we do have these isolation facilities, we do have responsive teams that will go out there, and we have a high index of suspicion at the emergency centers.
Harare City Health Director Dr. Prosper Chanzi was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Hundreds of pregnant women and girls are dying needlessly in South Africa due to failures in the country's health system, according to Amnesty International report. As Sela Hennessy reports for VOA from London, Amnesty says countries across Africa are failing to meet targets for reducing maternal mortality despite progress elsewhere in the world.
Antenatal care is free in South Africa's public health system, but that doesn't mean pregnant women and girls are getting the care they need, according to the report, which was based on research in two eastern provinces. Amnesty International's Louise Carmody spoke to VOA from South Africa. She says many women and girls don't visit clinics until the later stages of their pregnancy because they fear being tested for HIV and the stigma associated with testing positive. She said some women and girls say healthcare workers openly discuss HIV test results with others.
We saw issues around different colored files for pregnant women who were living with HIV, and different lines or queues for medication for people living with HIV. And those were sort of representative of the concerns that women and girls had highlighted themselves.
There were more than 1,500 recorded maternal deaths in South Africa in 2011 and almost as many in 2012. Amnesty says more than a third of the deaths were linked to HIV and 60% were avoidable. Carmody says transport also remains a major problem. Roads in some areas Amnesty surveyed are in such poor condition they cannot be used when it rains.
When women and girls found themselves in labor and the baby was about to come, they would tell us that the ambulance shortage was so profound that they were told to actually make their own way to the hospital. So they would have to pay between about $40 US and $100 to get to the hospital when the baby was coming.
London School of Oriental and African Studies expert on social aspects of health in Africa, Michael Jennings, says high maternal mortality rates in South Africa are related to the same problems in other countries in the region.
It shares many of the same barriers, even if it's a much richer country. So issues around cultural preferences for traditional birth attendance, critically the issue of gender power dynamics, where women have less power over their own bodies and less power over where they go for facilities. Access to transport, even if healthcare is free, if you have to pay to get to that facility, that makes it extremely difficult for many women.
Jennings says women's mortality rates are directly linked to their social, economic, and political status. He says it's far too easy to neglect women's health needs if their voices are not heard in policy and planning forums. Zayla Hennessy for VOA News, London.
More than 160,000 Ethiopians working in Saudi Arabia were expelled last year and sent back home due to new stricter labor regulations in the Middle East country. Martha van der Wolde reports for VOA from Addis Ababa how those repatriated Ethiopians are doing almost 1 year later.
Nine of the repatriated Ethiopians from Saudi Arabia are running this chicken business on the outskirts of Addis Ababa. The government provided them with poultry training and the premises. Almost a year later, returned Ethiopians such as Binyam Zeriun, who spent 4 years in Saudi Arabia as a truck driver, says he is optimistic despite his financial challenges.
When I came back, I didn't have anything. Now there's a chance for a future.
When Shet Fantu spent 15 years in Saudi Arabia working as a maid.
At this stage, we don't really have income from this, but at least we can cover the cost of feeding the chickens.
Hundreds of thousands of Ethiopians are working in the Middle East in manual labor jobs. A domestic worker abroad makes up to $400 a month, earning 10 times more than the same job in Ethiopia. So when Saudi Arabia introduced stricter labor laws, tens of thousands of undocumented and illegal immigrants came back to Ethiopia, where they were given $47 pocket money and sent to their home region, where they could register for training and small loans. Conchita Pelle, deputy head of the Addis Ababa Micro and Small Development Bureau, says a lot was done for the thousands that needed to be reintegrated.
So we gave them different things regarding psychological development and also business fields, for instance, in manufacturing sector, in construction sector, agriculture sector, trade and service sectors.
25-year-old Gabby Kelly spent almost 2 years in Saudi Arabia. When she came home, she and nine other women returnees set up this cafe and restaurant with a government loan. But she says it is not enough.
We don't have any salary. We just work here for nothing.
Fakaru is not happy with life since she is back. In Saudi Arabia, she earned $100 a month as a cook. She says the profit from the cafe is barely enough to pay back the loan.
The government has given us jobs, but even though the government has given us work, there's no result from it.
Fakaru says that if she would get the opportunity, she would go back to Saudi Arabia. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. The 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations hosts Morocco thrashed their visitors from the Central African Republic 4-0 in Marrakech on Thursday. On Sunday, Morocco will host Mauritania in Marrakech as Tanzania welcomes Benin in Dar es Salaam. Meanwhile, hosts Botswana welcome Egypt in Gaborone. Tunisia visit Dakar to play Senegal as Lesotho are at home to Angola in Maseru in 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Malawi host Algeria in Blantyre. Uganda play Togo in Kampala. Sierra Leone face Cameroon in Yaounde. Republic of Congo and South Africa clash in Pointe Noire. And Gabon play Burkina Faso in Libreville. Elsewhere, Ethiopia engage Mali in Addis Ababa. Niger encounter Zambia in Niamey, as Sudan challenge African champions Nigeria in Khartoum. The Democratic Republic of Congo host Ivory Coast in Kinshasa, as Mozambique engage Cape Verde Islands in Maputo. Meanwhile, Guinea host Ghana at the neutral venue of Casablanca in Morocco, because the Confederation of African Football has suspended the playing of football in the Mano River region as a measure to limit the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. Turning to women's football, hosts Namibia play Zambia as Nigeria engage Ivory Coast in Group A matches at the start of the Telecom Namibia Mobile Africa Women's Championships in the capital Windhoek tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, South Africa play Cameroon as Algeria challenge Ghana in Group B action. In rugby, South Africa play Wales as Kenya encounter American Samoa in Group B action at the start of the 2014-2015 IRB Rugby Sevens series being staged in the Gold Coast, Australia, tomorrow, Saturday. Finally, in athletics, Kenya's 10-kilometer and 15-kilometer world record holder Leonard Komon makes his marathon debut in Eindhoven in the Netherlands on Sunday. Komon says a chat with fellow Kenyan Dennis Kimeto just before he recently set the world marathon record in Berlin, Germany, has inspired his confidence as he seeks to better the course record of 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 46 seconds in Eindhoven. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a fabulous weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Britain will start enhanced screening of passengers arriving from West Africa at 2 London airports and the Eurostar train station, while a suspected Ebola death of a British man is reported in Macedonia. That's it for this Friday, October 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Do you love African music?
Music time in Africa. Wake, 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 wake,
wake. Umaru, wake. This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.